Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 3, The Birth of Lord Krishna, Text 25. What's on the board there? Nashte loke dvi paradha avasane maha bhuteshu Aributam Veteshu Vyakte Avyaktam Kala Vegena Yate Bhavan Eka Shishate Ashesha Samkhya Nashte loke dvi paradavasane Mahabhute shvadi bhutam gateshu Vyakte vyaktam kala vegena yate Bhavaneka shishate shesha sankhya Nashte after the annihilation Loke of the cosmic manifestation Dvi parada avasane after millions and millions of years, the life of Brahma. Mahabhuteshu, when the five primary elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, Adibhutam Guteshu, enter within the subtle elements of sense perception. Vyakte, when everything manifested. Vyaktam, unto the unmanifested. Kalavegena, by the force of time. Yate, enters. Bhavan, your lordship, Eka, only one, Shishate, remains, Ashesha Samgya, the same one with different names. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. After millions of years, at the end of cosmic annihilation, when everything manifested and unmanifested is annihilated by the force of time, the five gross elements enter into the subtle conception, and the unmanifested categories enter into the unmanifested substance. At that time, you alone remain, and you are known as Ananta Shesha Naga. Purport. At the time of annihilation, the five gross elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, enter into the mind, intelligence, and false ego, ahankar, and the entire cosmic manifestation enters into the spiritual energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who alone remains as the origin of everything. The Lord is therefore known as Shesha Naga, as Adi Purusha, and by many other names. Devaki therefore prayed, after many millions of years, when Lord Brahma came to the end of his life, the annihilation of the cosmic manifestation takes place. At that time, the five elements, namely earth, water, fire, air, and ether, enter into the Mahatattva. The Mahatattva again enters, by the force of time, into the unmanifested total material energy. The total material energy enters into the energetic pradhan, and the pradhan enters into you. Therefore, after the annihilation of the whole cosmic manifestation, You alone remain with your transcendental name, form, quality, and paraphernalia. My Lord, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you because you are the director of the unmanifested total energy, the ultimate reservoir of the material nature. My Lord, the whole cosmic manifestation is under the influence of time, beginning from the moment up to the duration of the year. All act under your direction. You are the original director of everything and the reservoir of all potent energies. Nashte loke dvi paradavasane mahabhatesh vadi bhutam guteshu yakte vyaktam kala vagena yate bhavan eka shishate shesha sankhya. After millions of years, at the time of cosmic annihilation, when everything manifested and unmanifested is annihilated by the force of time, the five gross elements enter into the subtle conception, and the unmanifested categories enter into the unmanifested substance. At that time, you alone remain, and you are known as Ananta Shesha, Naga. Om Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Pristai Bhutale Shri Mate Bhakti Vidanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Vicharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskatya De Satarne. Here is the Bhagavad description of the creation and the annihilation. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Asatyam Apratishtam Te Jagadohor Nishvaram Aprashparam Sambhutyam Kimanyat Kam Haitukam. They say that this world is unreal, it has no foundation, it has no God in control, it has produced a sex desire, it has no other cause than lust. This is the current so-called scientific explanation of how the universe has been created. They have this theory called the Big Bang Theory, that in the beginning there was nothing. But it's not quite nothing. It's a nothing that they have a book of equations to describe the nothingness. So if you have a book of equations to describe nothing, it must be something. But it's almost nothing. But then again, their intelligence is almost nothing also. So they say that the world is unreal. In other words, if it came out of nothing, then it's all unreal anyhow. If it came out of nothing, then it's really nothing. From nothing comes nothing. But somehow or another, from nothing, something seemingly came, and we're living in it, but ultimately it's really nothing. So if you understand that, then you haven't understood the Bhagavatam philosophy. You're a good candidate for a psychiatrist. Satyam apratishtam te. They say it's unreal, it has no foundation. In other words, the whole thing is not resting on anyone's control because there's anishvara, there's no control behind it. If there's seeming some control behind it, it's only due to illusion. But then where did the illusion come from if there was nothing? But they say, Anishvaram, there's no control. So if we look at the planets moving their orbits exactly on time, the fact that we're eating food and digesting it, and it's assimilating into the body, and the unnecessary parts are being eliminated, how did it all come about? Well, it's by chance. That's the argument. It's all chance. The whole thing's a chance. Planets moving their orbits exactly on time is by chance. Snowflakes falling in precise geometric patterns, it's all by chance. Of course, if everything came about by chance, the question is, why do these people who are propounding this philosophy work so hard and go to school to get their PhD? If the universe came about by chance, why don't they get their PhD by chance? Why do they have to work so hard to get something? If the universe came about by chance, so why don't they stay at home and become rich? Why do they have to organize and use their brains to become rich if the whole universe, which is much more organized than anything they can create, came about by chance? Well, why by chance they don't become millionaires? But they say the universe came about by chance, but they're not going to take any chance. So this is called hypocrisy. They claim it's all by an accident, but if they were so intelligent as to figure out how it all came about by accident, then why don't they create, with all their brains, something better than the accident? After all, an accident doesn't take much brains. It's lack of brains. If two cars crash into each other in the street and the police come and ask to report, they don't say, well, don't worry about it, police. There's no reason to investigate because it was an accident. It didn't really come about by... No one caused it. It was just an accident. No, they want to find out who caused the accident. And it's assumed that if it was an accident, that means that people had less intelligence that caused the accident. Not that the most intelligent people caused the accident. Accidents are caused by people because they lose their intelligence or they lack their intelligence. So if they're so intelligent that they figure out that it's an accident, then why don't they create a better accident at least? The sun, supposedly with its unlimited energy, heat and light, supplying heat and light for this universe since time immemorial, at least of this planet, keeping us alive. So if it all came about by accident, this huge, unlimited sun, then why can't they create a little tiny sun and put it over Melbourne during the winter? So it'd always be sunny. And they say, well, we can't do that. Well, why don't we create a little sun the size of a light bulb? And we can put it into one of the fixtures here and save so much on electricity. But they can't even create a sun the size of a thimble. But they say it's an accident. With all their brains, they can't duplicate the accident, but they claim they know how the accident came about. Or maybe they don't claim, but the only thing they say, there's no possibility that there was anyone with brains who did it. So the only thing it reveals is that they don't have any brains. If, with their not experience, intelligent people make intelligent things, useful things, so if we see the most useful creations, then we must assume that they must be made by the most intelligent person. So that's scientific. That's our observation. Science is supposed to be things that are observable. So if it's observed that there are intelligent people make intelligent things, and if we see something very intelligent, then it must be concluded, although we don't see the person who made it, there must be a person who did it, because we see intelligence manifested. According to the current scientific laws, there's a law called entropy. Entropy means that if things are left to themselves, then they become more random. And if things are organized, that means that there is a force behind it, organizing it. And if the force is displaying intelligence, there must be an intelligent person behind it. That's scientific. So here it mentions that Krishna is working with his different energies, that this is not a sentimental philosophy. Sometimes when people hear earth, water, fire, air, ether, they think, oh, this is very primitive. A clod of earth and some water, this is what God is working with, molding, you know, creating the forms, molding the human being with some earth, throwing some earth. Like some child at kindergarten takes some clay or something, throws it against the wall. Ah, look, there's a man came out. So this is not what it means by earth or fire, air. The actual words are bumer apan lo vayu. They don't convey the same meaning as in English. Earth means anything that's solid. In other words, this would be considered earth, the marble floor, the book would be considered earth, because there's some solidity. Anything that's solid would be considered earth. It's the same energy as the other energies, just transformed into becoming immobile. But even within this book, or we can say the floor that you're sitting on, the elements of water and fire and ether, they're also there. Because unless it was fire in the floor, you'd be, as soon as you sat down, you'd get stuck. Because it'd be so cold, you'd stick to it. So there must be some fire in the floor. We may not see the fire. We can feel it. Sometimes the floor may be feeling hotter and or cooler. How does it feel today? But after all, there must be some fire in it. Otherwise, you cool it down to absolute zero. You put your hand on it, it'll get stuck on it. And there must be some water in it. Otherwise, it wouldn't hold together. Try to take the... If you take some flour, it'll be very hard to keep it together unless you add some liquidity to it. And there's some air in it, otherwise it would just collapse. We may not see it moving. As a matter of fact, it's not moving very quick. Hopefully the floor doesn't move too quick. Otherwise you come in here and you see the floor down the street. So commonly we don't think that the floor is moving due to the air within it. But there's transformation going on. Unless it was air, then how would the floor get older or transform itself? And there is some ether. Otherwise the whole thing would be so solid that no one could break it. But actually it's practically all ether with a little bit of other energies in between. Anything that's solid is earth. Anything that's gaseous is air. So air is a big category. Anything that's effulgent is considered to be fire. Anything that has space in it, that allows for things to be accommodated within it, is called ether. So earth, water. Water means anything that's liquid. So these are all general categories of energies. And Krishna is, by his own energy, kalo smi loka shye krit prarido lokansa maharta mitaha pritak vitepi tuam naba vishanti sarve evasti tatyat pratikeshi yoda. Krishna, by his energy of time, is able to transform all these Brahman. Actually, he takes Brahman, which is a spiritual energy, and he mixes it with some other energies, the external energy, and it becomes false ego from the avyakta, from the pradhan, or the unmanifested, comes the avyakta, comes the mahatattva, comes the ahankar, which means that there is some consciousness of the ahankar. So what is that ahankar? Krishna more or less takes the collective consciousness in the previous creation of all the living entities, and that's called ahankar. And then he takes that ahankar and manifests their desires with his energies and creates the different forms within the universe, using the building blocks of the transformation of his energy, which build things like earth, water, fire, mind, well, first intelligence, mind, and then comes earth, ether, then fire, then air, or air, ether, fire, water, and then earth. He takes the collective consciousness, the collective vision, the intelligence of the living entities in their past creation, and manifests all the creations, all the different forms that we see around us. So it's all based upon the desires of the living entities in their past creation. He manifests it and puts it into motion under certain laws, and the living entities interact in the material world for a certain amount of time, and then buttons push, everything closes, the curtain closes, and whatever the living entities, whatever their consciousness is, it's collected and wound up again back into the pradhan, the unmanifest. But because Krishna remembers exactly what everyone did just like Santa Claus. He knows if you have been bad or good. He knows everyone's collective consciousness, and it just wound up again until the next manifestation. So this is the Supreme Person who's creating these things. He's the one within our heart who's noting down what we're thinking, what we're feeling, what we're willing to do, and he's noting our activities, and it's all being recorded, and according to the laws of material nature, we're going to get in the future a certain material situation. That's called the laws of karma, which act under the influence of time. The three modes of material nature, under the influence of time, manifests our karmic activities. So these are under intelligent control. And that one who's intelligent, he can see that intelligent control. And one who's not very intelligent, he can't see. So therefore Krishna says, Ukramantam sitim vapi bhunjana vagunan vita vimura nana pashanti pashanti jnana chakshusha. That the foolish, they cannot understand how the living entity quits his body or what kind of body he enjoys under the spell of the modes of nature. But those whose eyes are trained with knowledge can see all this clearly. In other words, according to who we're getting trained from, we're developing certain vision. The current vision of modern society is that this world is meant for our exploitation. People being trained in the so-called scientists, geology, biology, chemistry, whatever, computer science. But the whole vision is that how can we use our intelligence and exploit the material nature for our sense gratification? Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. With a heavy emphasis in modern society on mating and defending. Because they think they've solved the eating problem. Or the sleeping problem. Because they think, well, we don't really have to worry about the eating problem or the sleeping problem. Because if worse comes to worse, we've invented things like how to eat cotton. There's no other food. They're growing cotton in Texas that's edible. So when we run out of all the other food, we can just eat our dhoti or our sari. And as far as sleeping, they've invented so many drugs, you take it, you practically can't wake up again. You don't have to worry about anything because when you wake up, you can't even remember who you are or what happened. There's nothing to worry about. That's why they keep on saying no worries. Because they can't remember anything anymore. There's nothing to worry about because there's nothing up there to worry with. So the emphasis on defending and mating, as if they made a better life of defending, that everyone feels they're completely secure, everyone feels completely insecure, everyone probably feels unprotected, uncared for, unloved. And this is so-called progress in modern civilization, modern society, all based on training people how to exploit the material nature and how to exploit each other. In other words, their formula is, we're going to create a loving world full of peace and happiness by learning how to scientifically exploit everyone, everything that exists here. In other words, we're going to take 1 + 1 and it's going to equal to 5. And anyone who doesn't believe it won't pass their mathematics. But the devotee, he understands that the material nature is not meant for exploitation because we're not material. We have a different nature. If you have a car and you want to fill it up with oil, good enough. You go to the gas station, you put in petrol into the car. But if you start thinking, as I said yesterday, a hum car, I am this car, and you put the petrol pipe into your mouth and you start drinking it, it will not be very healthy. It will not be very productive. Similarly, identifying with this body and thinking by exploiting material nature, in other words, trying to arrange it in a way that suits our so-called whimsical desires, or our whimsical desires, that will make us happy. It's just like trying to enjoy the petrol from the car. We have a different food, which is spiritual, because we're not matter. And that spiritual food is, we have to engage in, instead of being directed by the illusory energy, we have to be directed by Krishna. And Krishna has created the world for a purpose, as described here. The scientists, they say there's no purpose, so let's enjoy it the best we can. There's nothing higher. But our Bhagavatam philosophy says that there's an intelligent person who created the world, that's why it works intelligently. And there's a purpose behind it, and that purpose is not to exploit it, but to utilize it properly, to get trained up in the devotional service of God, who's created it for us, so that we become eligible to get out of this world and go back to the world where we originally come from. That sometimes a mother may have a kitchen and her little child wants to cook, but because the little child is unqualified to cook, therefore the mother gives the child a toy plastic kitchen to experiment with. And therefore the child gets some plastic stove, some plastic pots, plastic chapatis, and she can cook. So even if something goes wrong, she won't get hurt ultimately, nor can she hurt anyone else. Similarly, God has given us the creation to work with. We can work through our desires. We can desire any number of things, but if we desire for progress, then we have to hear from persons who are more elevated than us and try to utilize the energy in such a way as to follow the directions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then ultimately our experiment here with the toy kitchen will be successful and we'll become qualified to work in the big kitchen and do something for Krishna, cook some nice prasad. But if we think that the purpose of the kitchen is to destroy all the pots, throw the toy chapatis around, smash the stove, and hit anyone with it who comes along, dare say that there's a purpose behind it, then the result is we won't be given a kitchen again so easily to play around with. So Krishna has given us this opportunity, especially the uniform of life, to try and understand how things are have created and what's the purpose behind it. That there's a person behind the creation, there's a reason behind the creation. We're here for a purpose. The human form of life is the opportunity to fulfill that purpose. And if we don't utilize that opportunity, then we gradually sink down so that the Krishna says, Yatantop yoginas chayana, pashant yatman yavastitaha, yatantop yakritatmano, naivam pashanti chetasa. The endeavoring transcendentalist who is situated in self-realization can see all this clearly. But those whose eyes are trained in knowledge cannot see what's taking place. In other words, those who are so-called trying to figure out what's going on in the material world in order to exploit the material nature, they're not able to understand really what's going on. Their intelligence is simply bewildered. And although they may seemingly become more and more expert at exploiting the material nature, actually, they're just becoming more and more expert at degrading themselves. They may think, now I'm controlling material nature, I can kill anyone. They don't realize all they're doing is creating some karma for themselves in the future. Krishna will give them the opportunity to kill people who have the karma to be killed, and the person who wants to kill them, they're just creating more karma. And the people that they're killing, they're simply utilizing their bad karma up by being killed. So no one is doing anything independently of Krishna. They're just imagining that they're becoming powerful. But the only thing that's becoming powerful is their false ego, and it's going to degrade them if they don't get the proper direction. They may think they've discovered so many laws of nature, they've discovered so many things, but they can't even understand who they are or what the purpose of their life is. Therefore, they're pashant yatmani vastitaha. They think they see what's going on, but they don't. na pashyati, pashanapi na pashyati. So this Bhagavatam is meant to give us a scientific, systematic understanding, consistent understanding, logical understanding, reality. And if we see through the eyes of Scripture, then those things that seem completely inexplicable to us, they seem reasonable and logical. If we just hear that a four-headed person, Brahma, one day he sits down and he comes out of a lotus flower and starts creating things out of his mind, then we think, wow, this is too far out. How can anyone really seriously take it? A four-headed person comes out and starts creating things out of a lotus flower. And then he creates so many suns, and they start creating from them, if you read the Bhagavatam, from Kashyapa's sons and his wives, they create the snakes, and they create the elephants, and they create the human beings, and the clouds and everything are given birth. From that point of view, if we just read it superficially, it seems completely mythological. This is a mythology. Some imaginative person wrote it some years ago. Maybe he was on drugs or something. So he came up with this Bhagavatam philosophy, and a few other people later on in the Western world who also took too many drugs, they start reading about this. They think it's far out, and they start worshipping, you know, totem pole and some statues. No, if we read it, and although we may not be able to understand it in its entirety, but still, it makes a lot more sense than this idea that everything here came out of nothing. That one day nothing was born, so it just created everything. After all, it's hard to be nothing for too long. Everyone wants to be something, including nothing. So we accept this absurd philosophy and think, oh, this is so scientific. So many advanced persons are looking their telescopes and they're seeing into the universe, to the far end of the universe with their telescope, and they've discovered it all came out of nothing. They looked into the microscope, and ultimately when they looked deep enough into everything, they saw nothing. So anyone who... this is not a very consistent, logical, intelligent philosophy. On the other hand, this philosophy that relies upon intelligence, superior intelligence, moving material energy, which is under their control, is within our realm of conception and perception and experience. And although we can't perceive and perhaps conceive everything, but at least part of it we can conceive of and experience. Well, the scientific explanation is completely beyond experience, logic, everything else, just only due to massive propaganda, huge amounts of money brainwashing people, and the fact that people become so dull due to their sinful activities, they actually think, far out. They build these huge temples called museums to convince people about it. They take a bone this big and make a dinosaur the size of this room out of it. And people believe it, that this is science. And they make a temple out of it, and people go there and pray to the scientists so they can get a job like they do and enjoy their senses. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
In the fourth kind of reading the Kumar story, he's making a call of Mother Earth. There is a mention of a different person is becoming a call of Mother Earth. You are taking out different items from Mother Earth. Is this story figurative or...?
No, it's real.
How do you understand?
You have to read it. If you read it carefully enough, you'll understand it. The different living entities are getting from the earth different things. Everything is a source, and there is a reaction coming from everything. Now, how it comes about is not explained in detail, but somehow or another it comes about by superior intelligence. The different persons mentioned, due to their superior intelligence, they know how to get different things out of the earth. Even the present-day society, They get food out of the earth. They get clothing out of the earth. They get their everything, their houses out of the earth. They get everything out of the earth. With our little intelligence, so people have more intelligence to get more out of it. Because within earth, everything is potential. All the different elements are within earth. And if you know how to work the potential, you can get anything from it. Yes?
What is the very viewpoint in existence of dinosaurs?
Dinosaurs? There is no Vedic viewpoint on the existence of dinosaurs. There may be different lizards that existed some time ago, just like when Mutrakunda came out of his cave, he looked around and saw all the different trees, they looked like little bushes. And that he went to sleep in Dwarf Biyuga. So maybe they were just lizards when people were much bigger. Exactly what they look like, the scientists don't really know. They may have been some with teeth, some without teeth. They just speculate. Besides that, a lot of the dinosaurs are still around. They've seen them floating, swimming in the water, some of them. Or they found remnants of them. So what the dinosaurs are, they're just one of the 8,400,000 species of life. The ones that are really dinosaurs, whatever they are. They're lizards. And where they are now, they're somewhere. Might be somewhere on the earth too, that in a place that people don't go to, or if they go to, they disappear. They have places that people go to, then they suddenly disappear, like the Bermuda Triangle. All these ships and planes go there, they suddenly disappear. No one knows what happened to them. But I wouldn't worry about the dinosaurs so much. They'll take care of themselves. Krishna will take care of them. Yes.
But Krishna's talking about the banyan tree. Banyan tree? He's talking about banyan tree, which is roots is upwards, and the branches are downwards. The root goes to the spiritual world. So is that what you were explaining? From the body of Vishnu or Brahman, the living entities take birth. And the previous to that.
Well, Krishna doesn't say that the roots upward and the branches down, they go to the spiritual world. He says they go to the topmost planet, Brahma Loka.
Right. It doesn't mean that when we came into the material world the first time.
We came as Brahma, or an elevated demigod, according to the Bhagavatam. We didn't come as a lizard or a worm. We start out on the top and work our way down. Yes.
I remember hearing Prabhupada say
Prabhupada never said anything about timangal fish swallowing planes. He said they swallow whales just like little guppies. They take it. This fish so big that timangal that they swallow the whales in the ocean. Swallowing planes. Well, you can find the reference. I'd be interested in seeing it. And make sure I don't fly over wherever it is. Anything else? Yes.
Einstein believed in God, and he himself said that there's a wonderful order of God didn't blend us with the world. He believed that Paralinga and Hiroshima was a small recreation of the sun's power.
What was the small recreation of the sun's power?
Hiroshima and Paralinga.
Well, the sun's power, yes, it's an exhibition of Krishna's power. But as far as Einstein believing in God, at least it's good for us to say that. Sometimes we put that on our books to sell the Bhagavatam or the Bhagavad Gita. But as far as how deep his religious beliefs are, he wasn't a very godly person. He didn't really have his idea of God was not exactly our idea of God. Thank you very much. Grantaraj Bhagavat Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur